advise you to get off the streets as quickly as possible. It'll soon be a war up there.
And we are, as a people, opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths.
I know for a fact.
And to secret proceedings.
Weapons of mass destruction.
I have a dream.
I take the threat very seriously.
A new world order.
Your government thanks you for your participation.
You are now listening to the world famous Sofa King podcast.
Please read from sheets. I am Sofa King.
Sofa King.
Now repeat all very fast, please.
I am Sofa King.
Faster.
I am Sofa King.
Not so fast. Loses meaning.
I am Sofa King.
With me, Todd. You say funny things.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sofa King podcast. Man, my voice is like crackly. It's not happening today.
Because you choked yourself before
Maybe.
We started.
I did.
It's because you've been getting choked out all week.
In honor of
Dan Camarillo.
That's right. Yes.
He's here with us today. He actually, me and Brent, I'm Brad, if you don't know, started our jiu-jitsu journey. And started training here locally with the man in town, Dan Camarillo. So we'd like to welcome him as a guest on our show. I'm going to say hello to everybody out there.
Hello to everybody out there.
Nice. He's here. So first, before we get into anything, we're going to talk a little bit about jiu-jitsu. If you don't know what it is, then go look it up on the internet. You might be able to find something
about
it.
Just daily bruising, really. That's what I've come to find. I'm just...
It's you're like jacked up.
It's where philosophy professors break your bicep.
The better you get, the less
that happens. Yeah. Apparently,
that stops
I'm horrible.
Happening.
Yeah, I'm covered.
So we want to thank a sponsor first. You want to give a shout out to them?
Yeah, we need to thank El Yucateco Hot Sauce. I haven't hot sauce bombed anyone, but it's in my pocket. I had it on my breakfast yesterday. I haven't done anything significant this week, though. Last week, I was running around putting it on tables while people were eating, but I haven't done anything cool like that this week.
Yeah, you're strange, man. I would really like pull my children away from you.
You put it on the tri-tip yesterday?
No, I didn't.
You didn't do it?
No, I didn't do it. It would have been too hot for the kids, I think.
Yeah.
But it would have been good.
You got to acclimate them.
Yeah. I put it on hash browns this morning. We had some really funny shout outs on Instagram about various hot sauces. We had the crazy London.
Oh, yeah.
That was good.
El Yucateco contacted us and asked if I mailed a basket of hot sauce to London. And I said, I did not. I sent stickers to the UK, but never hot sauce. And they sent me the link and it was a luchador from London, a Mexican wrestler from London with a basket full of Yucateco hot sauce saying, you have Sofa King podcast to thank for this. So somehow we caused a luchador in London to buy a basket full of hot sauce.
Which is strange.
That's fantastic.
We're doing something right. Yeah.
When we're getting luchadors in London to buy hot sauce, we're doing something. That was one of our goals. We have a bucket list of milestones.
Luchador in London,
buying hot sauce. That was one of our goals when we started.
Yep. So, what do you got?
Dan, what do I got?
Yeah.
You just put me out? Well, so Dan was raised on judo from what I read last night. I've met Dan before. He's choked me before, but he doesn't remember because he's choked lots of people.
Same neck, different face.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Well, I know a lot of people listening. A lot of people probably tuning in specifically because you're on the show, but I know a lot of regular listeners might not know. I think a lot of non-martial artists really don't know what the difference is between any of the martial arts. I think they just kind of view all of it as whatever Bruce Lee did, and that's what martial arts is. So maybe it would be good to explain specific, because I know judo and jiu-jitsu are sort of a very specific type of martial art that are different than other martial arts. And I've never done jiu-jitsu or judo. I've done karate, but so that's not my wheelhouse, so I'll defer to experts. But so if you had to break down what jiu-jitsu is for people who don't know the difference between this and other styles, what would you say jiu-jitsu is?
Well, it's more like wrestling.
Right.
And but with a lot of submission holds. And they try to base it more around a realistic self-defense situation.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas wrestling, they still turtle up and give their back. And, you know, in jiu-jitsu, we take that out. You're not supposed to turn your back on any of your opponents.
Right.
So,
which is something like karate, you never turn your back on your opponent. Right.
Yeah, pretty much. Unless you're doing a back kick.
Unless you're sanding the floor.
Right. Or you're still looking at them.
Or painting the fence.
Well, you still know where they are, even if you turn your back to them.
Yeah, or you always keep an eye on them.
You're doing it poorly. But it doesn't emphasize strikes or kicks. It emphasizes grappling and submission.
Yep. Yeah, more of a hands-on control kind of thing.
Right, so. Yep. Right.
So, yeah, so to those of you, specifically Dude Passerby on Twitter, who's calling me a judo pussy, did you see those posts on there?
No.
Yeah. So, yeah, so I've been called out by somebody. I don't know where that guy lives, though. So I did judo since 2008, and I've always had this separation between jiu-jitsu and judo. And actually, Brent, you got me started in judo, and and I love it. But now I'm starting jiu-jitsu, and I'm beginning to love that. Like it's a whole different culture. And I think I was brought up in traditional martial arts where it was very formal. You bow, you always bow to your partner. I mean, you did judo obviously. So, you know, kind of how it works. But in jiu-jitsu, it's a little more less formal. And that was like the hardest part for me to get used to.
That was my issue, to be honest. And Brad should not give me any credit for getting him started in judo because it involved like showing up to the same place as him, like one or maybe two nights. I don't even think I went two nights. I went to judo, but it was super traditional. Like no shirt under your gi, like bow in, bow out, like very like counting and saluting flags. Like it was just, it was way too.
Saluting flags.
I don't know. It was too weird, man.
He wasn't even there.
Maybe that was like crazy hot keto. Very traditional. And I never do well in that environment.
Flags. He didn't even go to school.
No.
I was like, a wrestler, and that's the problem.
Brent was in the room, but he never did judo. So
I want coach to be like, okay, let's like, here's the thing. Show you whatever role.
Smash
like,
his head.
And like, just be able
smash
to
smash his
like,
head.
I need a more relaxed, non-traditional environment like that. More like wrestling practice, which thus far, that's why I feel like I'm going to be okay and stick to it this round at your school.
Well, we'll see. In judo, it was very traditional.
Yeah.
You bow in, you bow out. You don't walk in front of your instructor. You don't talk back. You just do your job. And, you know, in jiu-jitsu, what I've noticed is a lot of schools don't emphasize that. They don't push those rules.
Yeah.
And I'm in the middle. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
I still have some students that call me professor or coach or, and they always say, what should I call you? What should I call you? They say, my name is Dan. You know what I mean? You know, I like to be a little closer to my whole, all my students and more of a family environment, but yet I still think you should respect the mat.
For sure.
So, yeah.
No, I mean, similar thing. A friend of mine came up doing judo, and again, very formal atmosphere. Yeah. Take your shoes off before you enter the dojo, like the whole thing. And then I studied Goju Kai for about 15 years here in town with this amazing like backyard redneck. Like there's no, I mean, there was no dojo. There was just, you know, you're like
backyard kicking
the horse stance for 10 minutes with red ants chewing on your feet. And
oh,
like,
God.
You know, but he was just.
Sounds amazing.
But he's still, I mean, there was still. He still respected a certain amount of that formality. You would still bow. You'd still wear your gi. You know, you'd still count in Japanese. I mean, there was a splash of the formality. I think if there was too much formality, I would have been turned off by it. And I think if there was none at all, it just would have felt weird because, like, I'm trying to study this ancient art and I want, like, that's what makes you feel connected to the past in some way.
Well, and I think one of the big things is, like, judo hasn't really taken off in the U.S. I mean, there's a group. And there's a, you know, competition and they have all this stuff. But I think where Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu has picked up was because of its not as formal way of life, basically. And I think a lot of wrestlers came over to it. Normal people came over to it and it was easier for them to take up like yourself, Brent.
Right.
And that's what made it take off. I mean, do you agree with that? Is there.
Well, you know, for those people out there who don't know that judo, unfortunately, in the U.S., yes, it wasn't that popular, but overall, it used to be the second most popular sport in the world under soccer.
Yep.
I don't know how it is now, you know, but, it, you know, just because it's not huge here, you know.
Right.
But, jiu-jitsu, and unfortunately, the United States, they like violence and everything like that. And they watch the UFC on TV and then they're all like, oh my gosh, I got to learn that stuff. It's beating everybody up.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, it's jujitsu's blowing up and people are making money off of it right now. And
yeah,
it's growing. It's just going to continue to grow.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, that's a very, very important moment in the popularity of jujitsu. I mean, when I started doing karate, this was in the late 90s. And jiu-jitsu wasn't really a big thing. I mean, I knew about it. I knew there were schools in town, especially because a lot of my friends did judo, and there was always kind of a bleed over between the two. But really, when UFC hit, and those first couple of UFCs, like those brutal Roman Gecko, no rules, we're just going to pound the snot out of each other forever.
The legit UFCs.
And then finally, when a handful of people came up and just started like wrecking with jiu-jitsu, that was, it just exploded. And that was like kind of the growth of UFC. And then that made jiu-jitsu become suddenly popular. I think there's definitely, I think that's really responsible for the popularity in the States anyway. I don't know how popular jiu-jitsu is globally or if that's more of a US phenomenon.
Well, I know like South America, jiu-jitsu is pretty big because a lot of them are raised up in judo, but then they turn over to Brazilian jiu-jitsu, which, you know, they kind of bleed over. Brazilian jiu-jitsu comes from judo, but I think really like my take on it is that they're the same thing, just two different sports. So you train for one sport, which the rules are different. You know?
Mean judo and jiu-jitsu?
Judo and jiu-jitsu, yeah. And you train for one sport, you know. So if you're going to do judo, you're going to train for those rules as opposed to jiu-jitsu, you're going to train for those rules. So I think that's where people get the differences from, you know. I mean, they're two separate things, but then again, they're you know, cousins of each other pretty much.
This is what I tell everybody who asks me what's the difference, and I tell them, you know, judo is 75% standing throws, and 25% mat work with the submission holds, and then jiu-jitsu's exact opposite. You got 75% mat work and 25% standing.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, usually everything that I see, I'm much more familiar with judo from seeing a lot of tournaments and visiting a lot of classes, and it tends to be, you're just practicing the throws.
It's all stand up. Position. You throw, and then if it doesn't go anywhere, you stand back up. And,
right.
There's one thing I will say that people don't give judo enough credit. Okay.
Yeah.
Judo is amazing. It's a lot more difficult than jiu-jitsu. It's not only more difficult to learn, but man, it is a lot rougher. You know,
it's hard on your body.
Yeah. And the pace is nonstop.
Yeah.
Whereas in jiu-jitsu, you see them resting and relaxing and no stalling points. And
yeah,
no, judo's, you can't stop moving for 3 seconds or you get penalties.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Brad keeps trying to get me to go, but I'm too old to get tossed, dude. If we're just getting thrown on a crash pad, I'm fine, I guess, but I don't want to get thrown on those mats. Like,
You don't have to get thrown if you don't want.
Yeah, I'll be that guy.
It's more for the, I wanted you to go for the cardio.
Yeah.
You know, like to get going.
Again, the more you learn it, the less you get thrown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
know,
goes back to those bruises. Yep,
that's true. And the more that's true, you won't get thrown. But the other honest truth is the more you learn it, the more a throw isn't going to hurt you.
Yeah, we got to drill those throws. You know, though. You get thrown 10 times and then throw him 10 times.
Yeah, for me, like you said, the crash pads, like those are great for beginners, you know, where you're landing on a nice soft surface, but I'd rather get thrown on the hard mat because the crash pad actually hurts you.
Right.
Like your arm flies off the end of it and, you know, hurts your arm, or you hit your ankle on the floor in a funny angle, you know? So, you know, it's all perspective of how you want to do it, but.
And even in my karate dojo, my sensei, like if he was sparring all of the rest of us, he would spar a certain way. But when he was sparring sparring my friend Steve, who had a black belt in judo while we were training, he would just toss him. I mean, he would just toss him through the air because he knew, and you would watch and he would just sort of land and roll and be back on his feet. And I was like, if he did that to me, I would be laying in a broken heap right now.
Because he knows how to fall.
Yeah.
So you started judo at age 4. And, you know, I think from what I read, you know, your dad was a huge influence in doing that for you and your brother. Did you at some point at that age enjoy it? Did you love it? Like, can you give anyone out there that's a father, some type of advice to get their kids involved, but possibly do it in a way that's not overbearing? And where's the line to keep someone interested that you're not grooming for the Olympics? You know what I mean? You want them to gain, you know, the confidence from the sport, but not be overbearing.
you know, at that age, I think that most parents should just make sure that their kid's having a good time, having fun. Does he want to go back to that class? And then if yes, then good, he's in the right place. But if he doesn't at that age, maybe find something he's having fun with.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, most of the time at that age, I did learn, you know, I learned how to fall, take falls and roll around, but it wasn't, you're not going to be serious at 4 or 5 or 6.
Yeah.
But, and you know, I was getting in trouble a lot too, doing a lot of duck walks and, you know.
Yeah. I mean, kids don't have that willpower to keep it going though. So there's like, kids don't want to go to piano practice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
it's an attention span.
You almost have to like force them a little bit. There's a little bit that, no, you have to do this because they won't do it. I mean, some kids will, but I know I got to make my daughter dress out for soccer. Like, no, you're going, you decided to do this. You got to do it.
Yeah.
It's just a trick of finding that fine line of not being.
Well, and that's kind of the difference between a traditional soccer or football or baseball. You have a season.
Right.
You know, like these kids go out and they have 15 games or whatever. In judo and jiu-jitsu and wrestling, there's really no season. There's constant tournaments.
Exactly.
So that's the kind of the line you have to draw is, like he said, if they're not having fun, you know, then it's you're just forcing them to go. And there is no stop to it. You'll keep pressuring them to go. And then they're going to hate it and resent it.
There's that big thing, though. When you grow up, you don't appreciate anything your parents did.
until you're older.
Like 30.
Yeah.
Because you're like, damn, I had to do this for Christmas. Yeah. Like they bought all those presents. They made me do that thing. And now I understand why they did it, but they hate you during the process. So that's why I'm getting at, like, is it still worth it? Should you push the kid through it? Like, from your perspective.
Well, here's another thing, you know, once the kid says, okay, this is what I want to do. And most schools, they have contracts. They have a 1-year contract, 6-month contract. Okay. But if that kid's, he goes, oh, I love it here. I want to be here. Sign me up. And then you're paying. Now, what I've seen is parents let their kid quit. Mm-hmm. So what is that kid going to learn?
He's going to learn it's okay to quit.
He could do whatever he wants and keep quitting.
Right.
And he'll never be successful at anything.
Okay.
So at least play that 1 year out and then decide if you want to move on. But teach him not to quit. You know, I think that's an important lesson in life right there.
Yeah. And I think that's a conversation. You know, everybody parents different. But if I was to sign my kid up for something that was going to be 6 months, I'm going to tell them right in the beginning, look, it's going to cost me this much money. You're going for six months.
Yeah.
Like, this is it. You know, like 6 months. And then if you want to quit, that's fine. But you're going to complete this time span. And that would be something reasonable. I think that'd be the same thing as any other regular sport.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, I have 2 daughters. They have absolutely, you know, they've done some judo, some groundwork stuff that they like, you know, but they don't want to do it. So it is what it is.
How important do you think it is, like, for kids, like, mentally, like, with that level of confidence, how much do you think it translates into life? Like, things, obstacles they're going to overcome later. If they have personal confidence to know that they can basically handle themselves, is that going to translate later in life? Do you think it's a huge benefit for kids?
I wouldn't be the same person I am right now without it. No doubt. No, I have confidence, you know, self-awareness. I've got attributes that help me if I need it. You know, it's like one of the interviews that's online right now is, I would be a wimp without it right now. You know what I mean? I'd be a different person.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
and that's referring to a specific story. So do you want to tell your Denny's story, story that I read online?
Denny's. Yeah.
It's going to be after the break.
Yeah.
Yeah. We just teased you with an awesome story. Stick around and you'll listen to it after the break.
Perfect timing.
This is the world-famous Sofa King Podcast. Stay tuned and listen to more awesome words.
Welcome back to the Sofa King Podcast, and we're here with Dan Camarillo from Camarillo Jiu-Jitsu in Bakersfield, California. And we were just talking to him, asked him to tell us a story about Denny's and what happened. You were there with your brother?
Yes,
I
was.
Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, well, so we were at a, you know, we were out having a good time celebrating something, you know, and when the place closed that we were at, we were actually at the same club that these guys were at, but we didn't know it. We saw these girls earlier that night. We went to Denny's, you know, where everyone goes and eat.
This is a 2 a.m. Yeah. after the bar. Moon's over my hammy.
This is a 2 a.m.
Moon's over my hammy.
This isn't church, then Denny's, moon's over my hammy. This is late drinking, night. Moon's over my hammy.
Yeah. Well, I didn't actually get the order that night. But anyway, so we ended up going to Denny's. We were hungry. And I noticed these, you know, I was single. I'm sitting here. I look at these two attractive women walking in. I keep my eye on them. They walk into the lobby where we're at. We're waiting for a table because the place is packed. These two guys come storm, or three guys come storming and get right in front of them, start yelling at them.
Yeah.
Just yelling at them. And one guy, he's my size. The rest of the guys that were like, one was bigger than him. The next guy was bigger than him.
They were tiered. You know, AT&T like bars.
The three bears. Yeah.
Well, he was putting his finger on her and calling her all kinds of names. And I'm looking around. Security's not doing a thing. I'm like, are you kidding me? And
Denny's security sucks. I don't think it exists.
But you know, he was big.
Yeah.
And he looked like, I'm not going to do anything. There's three of them. You know, he wasn't going to do anything.
Right. You're like, man, am I the guy looking around hoping someone's going to...
I'm looking around. Nobody in Denny's is doing anything.
No.
So I hit my brother and I tell him, hey, we need to help them because this guy was getting more and more physical.
Right.
And, you know, like those guys that have that switch and that's all they see in front of
them.
Yeah,
right.
That's what he was
blinders
doing.
Blinders on.
He was zeroing in on her. Yeah.
Yeah.
And my brother goes, wait, let me hear. And he hears what the guy's saying. And he goes, okay. And then he taps, there was four of us, and he taps the other guys. And he goes, hey, follow me. And I went straight to him, put my shoulder up against the girl he was hitting. And I yell at him. I said, hey. And he still wouldn't even look at me.
Yeah.
He's still yelling at her. And he went to hit her again, like on the shoulder. And I swiped his hand. You know what I mean? So he wouldn't touch her. And I said, he goes, don't you effing touch me. I said, no, don't you. And before I can say it, he shoved me. And then my rebound was, okay, I hit him, grabbed him, took him down. We landed on the waiting bench in Denny's.
Awesome.
And I don't know what happened the rest. I'll tell you what happened the rest because my brother described it. But I'm on top of this guy and he's holding me as tight as possible, like a
bear hugging you.
Yeah, man. He's like, he doesn't know what to do. You shouldn't be doing that, but he, you know. So I cross face him and go knee on stomach, broke his grip, and then I just started punch, punch, punch. And he rolls over, and stupid me hit him a couple times. I almost broke my hand because I'm hitting the back,
the back of
his
head.
Head,
yeah. Yeah, hard.
So I switched.
Skull.
I switched to elbows. You know,
attaboy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm, you know, I you don't beat women in front of me. I'm just sorry. You don't do that. I'm going to try and step in. I don't care what she did to you. Let her go. And, you know, whatever. Yeah. But after throwing a few elbows, you know, my jeans are covered in his blood and I'm just like, I got to stop
and man, kill this guy.
I let him go and he couldn't walk. He's falling down over there. I fell off the waiting bench and I noticed my shoes are off. My shoes came off while fighting. And I look, so I'm on half of my back's on the mat, on the ground, and my feet are up on the waiting bench, right? So I kind of look funny, right? And I look to my right and there's a shoe right next to my face. Now I'm laughing, right? I pick up my shoe, I start putting it on, and I guess the biggest guy got free. And he ran over, and while I look over, boom, kicks me right in the face.
Oh.
So I, single leg guard. Well, back in the Half Gracie days, we called it single leg guard. It's called De La Hiva now. And so I use his jeans. You know, people say you should be learning no-gi jiu-jitsu to learn how to fight. No, man. People wear clothes every day.
Yeah.
Right.
Unless you're at the beach.
Yeah.
They're wearing clothes.
Yeah, right? You could choke somebody with a t-shirt.
With a t-shirt. Yeah, yeah, man. Or, you know, whatever. Anyway, so I rolled my fingers into the bottom of his Levi's and I grabbed his wrist and I threw my one leg in and started sweeping him as my friend jumped on him.
Yeah.
You know, long story short, I decided not to hurt him, even though my friend had him in a choke and I could have just blasted him for kicking me. But I didn't. You know, I knew the fight was done.
And, right.
They go outside and Then they start yelling at us like we're going to go get our GAT, and they're talking like we're going to go get our... No, I'm serious. I'm serious. They were
tough guys.
Yeah, and we're going to go get our... The guy I beat up, they're carrying. They had a carry. And then we're going to go get our GAT. We're going to go get our GAT. I said, you would need it. You guys don't even know how to fight.
What year was this? I'm basing it off the GAT. I think it's the 90s.
99 to 2000. Yeah. 90, probably 99. Yeah. It's probably right after...
Yeah, because that's when people quit saying
GAT. At that time, were you?
I'm a little old.
at that time, were you competing heavily, or had you kind of?
So
you were full tournament mode, you know?
Yeah.
Beast mode on them. Yeah.
Well, it's funny.
You know, what's crazy is they caught them doing 105 down. They were driving home, I guess, to go
right to the hospital.
They were 105. They got pulled over, and I'm talking to the police officer at the place.
Yeah,
and they go, "Oh, they got him!" And we had to go identify them.
Oh, wow!
Yeah, we had to go out identify them. They go, "We knew we had those guys from Denny's because he's covered in blood."
Yeah,
and I saw,
I recognize my knuckle marks right there.
Well, no, they pulled me out and they said, "Are these guys?" I said, well, that's two of them. They go, "Yeah, the third one had to go to the hospital."
Yeah,
oops.
Yeah, to get a few stitches. You know,
that's why they were going 105, trying to get to Mercy.
He blamed it on the waiting bench.
That's funny.
So in contrast to that, though, so you know, you owe that level of confidence. Like, you might not have done that in that situation, you think. That could have gone differently. There was a story from high school where someone threw a Coke at you, I guess.
Yeah, you know, there was this one guy, and I don't want to say his name.
Jimmy Mahoney. That's what we do with that. Yeah. Jimmy Mahoney.
But he was always eyeballing me. In fact, I think my third day in high school, we got into a fight.
Yeah.
I hit him one time and he didn't retaliate. But I wasn't a physical guy. And then I didn't have the confidence. I knew judo. I was a black belt in judo.
You were like a U.S. champ at that point, right?
Yeah, I was really good at judo. But no one said, hey, if you throw them, you get on them, you hold them like this, this is what happens.
Right.
No one taught me that. I was just a sport judo guy.
Right.
And I had many confrontations with him, but the last time I almost unleashed on him because, he threw a Coke at me and he just stared at me. It hit me in the chest and I'm just standing there going,
bully.
I'm just going, oh my gosh, I want to get my hands on you. You know what I mean? But I didn't do anything, you know?
Do you think that was like humble restraint, or was it still lack of confidence? You would think that.
No, it was lack of confidence.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's a fine line, though. Like, what makes the guy become the bully with the power of 2,000 matches behind him and being a U.S. champ in judo? Some people take that and, you know, with great power comes great responsibility type thing.
Like, I think I think looking at the two different things in judo, you're not really taught, like, you're aggressive on the mat, but you're taught. It's a sport. I mean, that's like a soccer guy going out and starting to kick people all over the place. You know, well, like
here's what woke me up. Watching Hoist Gracie and the rules he applied to engage.
Yeah.
Okay. You keep your distance. You fake your punches. You do the shot. Take them down and control.
Yeah.
The minute I saw him do that, I had the confidence.
Right. It was changed like your game. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And we're not telling everybody to go out there and just, you see people and start beating them up. You know, like, this is self-defense. You know, you're out there. There are bullies, you know, and especially for kids, you know, that are bullied in school. You obviously don't want them going out and picking fights. Like, that's not what putting your, you know, son or daughter into jiu-jitsu or judo or any martial art. That's not the goal. I think, on my end, and I don't know if you agree with this or not, but how I got brought up in martial arts and competing and everything else was that a lot of people get confused with karate or jiu-jitsu or whatever as they're going to send their kid to get discipline, you know, to build discipline, or wrestling, you know, they build this discipline. But I think it's not about discipline as far as like behavior. It's more about discipline of completing something and going constantly
follow through.
And like you said, not quitting. I think that's where the discipline comes in for me, you know, like, I don't know if you'd agree with that or partially.
No, actually, I'm glad you said that. We've had a lot of guys that come in, you know, they're big, huge bodybuilders or even little, you know, they got an attitude on them. They're,
yeah.
It doesn't matter. But once they start the jiu-jitsu, you can see it humble them. I've even had people come up to me, dude, I was so hot. I don't fight anymore. I don't do this anymore.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know, jiu-jitsu is awesome because it does. It'll humble you your first time you step on the mat.
Oh, for sure.
And another thing that she said is, we are not, I don't think I've started a fight in my whole life, maybe once, but the guy was already a bully.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's like all my confrontations have been a defensive situation where it's either protecting someone or myself.
Yeah. Right.
Plain and simple.
And I think, I mean, that's a through line with almost everyone I know who's studied martial arts at a good, you know, school. They end up, you learn how to fight, and it seems like there's this curve of the more you know how to fight, the less you feel like you ever need to fight.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people want to start a fight because they want to prove something. They want to prove they're the cock of the walk and act like they're all, you know, tough. But most people who really are tough and really know how to fight, they already know this. They've proven. I mean, I think part of the, I mean, even talking about discipline, I think really one of the big things in martial arts, and this is what I found. I mean, I'm a big guy. I'm 6'5". I'm not skinny. I never have been.
Not going to put a number on that.
Huh? I'm not going to put a number on that. I'm a very large, I'm the guy that walks in the room and everybody's like, damn, a very large man just walked into the room. But in karate, I never felt I could take the person I was fighting. I never felt that way because we're all getting this same level of training. And that wasn't what it was about. I had weaknesses that I knew. My sensei would point out, you're not very good at this. You're pretty good at this. You need to work on that. And every fight I was in, every time I was hitting the bag, every time I was training, I was battling my own deficiencies.
Yeah.
I was my opponent in the ring. I mean, yeah, there was another human being in there, but I knew I had slow combinations. And the only thing I cared about was trying to see if I could get these combinations I've been practicing on. And even if I got my butt whooped in the match, if I did that thing that I've been trying to do, I walked out feeling like it was a victory because I accomplished this internal goal that I had. And my sensei would bring some ringers in, some professional kickboxers that he was friends with, that, you know, like at one of my at my brown belt tournament, there was a guy, John the Shadow Washington, who my sensei knew and brought him
that in. Sounds legit.
He was legit.
John the Shadow.
He was legit. And like two nights before our promotion, sensei, I was getting some extra training with sensei before the promotion, and he said, hey, yeah, like tonight at like 1 a.m. on like ESPN2, he's going to be fighting. And I watched him, and he won the belt and the whole thing. He was in Vegas. And then like 2 days later, he shows up, and I'm just like, oh my God, like this guy, he's a little bit shorter than I am, and he's just lean, and he's a professional fighter. It's what he does for a living, you know, and no one else in the room knew who he was. He's just some guy and when he was like, okay, you know, Shadow wants to fight first. Who wants to fight him? I was like, I'm gonna, because I'm not gonna win. Like, there was no pretension that I was gonna win. I just wanted to see what can I do against a professional fighter. And he cleaned my clock. I landed two kicks on him, and both of them he thought were really good. I fought until I was about to throw up, and then he was like, good match, man, good match, and sat down. He fought all of us. There were seven of us. He fought all of us in a row, and then fought me a second time, and was just then getting winded. And I'm just like, that's a professional fight. But it's like, I didn't get into the ring thinking I was going to win. I knew I was going to lose, but that wasn't the point of the fight. And it really, it builds this confidence in you that I can't really explain. I recommend everybody do a martial art.
You know, I think that's awesome that you say that, because I have students right now. I have a few high level students that all they care about is who they tapped. And I try to explain to
them.
You know, it doesn't matter in our own academy who you submit, right?
Right.
Yeah, you're all teammates.
No, man. Yeah. Learn as much as you can, man.
Well, I was telling Brent, I got choked twice and armbarred by a white belt in jiu-jitsu. I'm a black belt in judo. And I told him, I said, I think I really figured out why there's that, you know, jiu-jitsu versus judo thing online, and you see all these people like say, oh, I tapped a black belt and this and that. It's because you're being a black belt, you are humbled. You know, there's always somebody bigger and better than you. You know, you're not, I mean, you are good, but it's just the beginning. You know, you're just a student.
You put time in it, you know?
Yeah. You put time in it, but you're just a student just like everybody else. And like I told Brent, I was like, I was going like 50%, you know, like I'm not going to go hard on these guys. You know, like I'm trying to learn. I want to flow. I want to learn what I'm doing. And I'm not there to beat people up, you know? And I think people fail to realize that when, you know, you're out of your element, you know, you're starting something new, you know, I'm not there to beat anybody up. I'm there to learn, you know, just like everybody else. And it's been fantastic. You know, I can't wait to go, you know, like I was going to go Friday with him. We went Thursday. I was going to go Friday, but I was like, nope, I better let my body rest because I'm going to get hurt. Like it's killing me.
I almost
like,
put a note on my door at my shop and close my shop because I wanted to go on Saturday so bad. I'm not sore anymore, but that whole ego thing, man, I have to say, like, this sounds funny. I've done jiu-jitsu before and I know, and like coming from wrestling, like learning to be comfortable on your back and just let it happen. Lose, tap, 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 yeah. Move on to the next, learn. But man, it's like it reset. Like I'd been out of jiu-jitsu for a long time, so much that I don't really remember anything. And going back, and a humbling story is I walked in there on a Tuesday, last Tuesday, and cute little blonde girl walks up to me at the end of practice and is like, hi, you want to roll? And I was like, man, she's a blue belt. Like, blue belt's a blue belt. I don't care. She weighs 140 pounds, cute little blonde girl. And I knew, I was just like, yeah, she's going to get me. I know it. Like, I know it, you know? So I went for it. She choked me three times. I tapped three times. And there's like grown men watching me. You know, I'm 230 pounds and this girl is all over me like a spider monkey.
The grown men is me and a couple other guys. Yeah. And we're laughing.
I'm just like, you know what? Whatever. Yeah. I'm getting laughed at.
No,
I had a huge bruise, like lapel. Like, but you know what? I felt a little bit better because I read an interview with Dan online and he referenced that girl about how quickly she advanced. Like, she's a bit of a phenom. Like, she got her blue belt in like just over a year and did a tournament and beat someone that was training for three years. And like, you even got some flack for giving out that belt so quick, but obviously
I did. Yeah. I got flack for that. And we were at a tournament and she was beating some other blue belt girls and they're all, well, how long has she rolled? And I said, only a year. And they gave me flack right in person. You know, yeah. I'm like, well, she just,
if you're at the level, you're at the level.
Yeah, exactly. Your student who's been a blue belt for how long, you know, I mean, come on.
If you're ready,
if you're ready, you're ready. Yeah. I'm not going to hold people back. Yeah. And that's just not me.
And that's, I'm not embarrassed to say it. Like 90% of my fat friends that are going to give me crap for it. It's like, go get your, come with me tomorrow. Yeah, and I will let you shake. Yeah. Her name's Liz, go shake her hand and go ahead. And I guarantee you're getting choked.
That's the humbling thing about jiu-jitsu and even judo is that, you know, I'm a big guy. I'm 6'1", 260 pounds. And there's guys that are 170 pounds, 5'7" that just roll me up. You know, I mean, they can just put a hurt on you. So anyway, we'll take a break. And after the break, we'll come back and you'll hear more from Dan Camarillo. And maybe you'll join us for a session and you could choke Brent out.
From the morons. Listen to more on SofaKingPodcast.com. Stay tuned through the break.
To the Sofa King Podcast here on the Sofa King Podcast. We are podcasting, if you didn't know. If you're not listening, probably you should start listening now.
If you're not listening, you can't hear this.
Did that come out wrong?
If you're not listening, you can find us at www.podcast.com.
Yes, that's us. www.com.
Yes.
So if that didn't confuse you, then you're smart.
Or you're not listening.
So during the break, we were kind of discussing you have your own gis. Dan is called the Arm Hunter. If you don't know, if you just search Dan Camarillo or Arm Hunter, it's armhunter.com is where you can find information about him and kind of his past and future. And you sell your own gis with your logo. Is that correct?
Yes.
And then also they come with a DVD, you were telling us. So tell us a little bit about that.
I just filmed a, armbar series DVD, mm-hmm. and I'm giving it away with a gi. That's the only way you can get it. I'm going to
sell them gis and get
until
your free
some DVD. Jerk rips it to YouTube.
Oh,
Sure.
We'll hunt you down.
We'll find him.
We'll shut him down.
Yeah, Brent is very good at computers. Yeah, we'll shut you down.
I'll get him.
Yeah, yep. Brent has a very particular set of skills.
A very particular set of skills. He's not good at jiu-jitsu, but he can find you over the internet. That's how.
I'll find your Arm Hunter DVD ripoff.
I will find you. I will delete you.
Yes.
I will report you to YouTube.
Oh my god!
So where can they go to get your geese? What's the
It's armhunter.com.
Armhunter.com. So
so go check it out. And it's like a What's the, because I know I'm used to wimpy karate gis. Like we wear, like,
yes, these are manly jiu-jitsu gis.
We wear gis that are like, you know, super a light summer breeze, yeah. You know, and it's like I look at those, the jiu-jitsu and the judo gis, and they're like,
I don't know, man. My karate gi was a Toyo, and that thing was thick. Like it would snap. You punch, whoosh, you know, it snapped.
It's like still Indiana different. Jones, I mean, a grappling gi is a completely different creature.
Yeah,
like other, because it's just going to shred like toilet paper if you do these moves.
No, I mean, Dan wears his gis at the club, and they're very nice gis. I'm actually probably going to pick one up because I don't have a black gi yet. I like being the opposite, though. I like if everybody's wearing black, I want to wear white.
You know, okay, first off, there's nothing wrong with karate gis. They're just not made for
gripping. No,
they're not made for gripping.
They're not made for gripping and dueling and
different
torquing
style.
And
again, I didn't realize, because I'd see, again, my friend from my studio who was a judoka. And
judoka. You know
what they call it? Judoka? Sorry. Yeah. I'm a karateka, so I don't get it right. I would see him like at his tournaments, and everybody walking around in their gis. I was just like, "My God, look at those gis! You all look like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man."
Yeah.
And then like they would get out on the mat, and like every other match ended with a shredded gi, and I was like, "Damn, my gi has judo. No business in this arena."
No, well, like one of the things is like, especially for judo, like the throwing, the handles, like and a lot of guys wear a thick gi, they're called a double weave because the thicker it is, the harder it is to get a grip on. You know, so it's thicker, it's bigger. Jiu-jitsu actually is more form-fitting, so it's actually hard to get a grip on in that sense, because if somebody bends their arm, it's so tight on their arm.
Oh, that is true.
You know, like it's you know, I think, is there some sort of, like in competition, does your gi have to be a certain length, or like kind of like judo, like I know it has to be a certain style and fit?
You know, it's funny you say that, because in judo, they've always measured our gis, made sure there's a certain length that has to be.
Has to reach your wrist.
In my early years of jiu-jitsu, they never measured. You know, tournaments were still new, and they're like, "Oh, just get on the mat." And people would be high water. High water. You're trying to do a leg drag, and you can't grab their gi
because
it's up to their knee. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But now they measure all the time, and it has to be.
It has to come down to the wrist and all that stuff. Yeah. So it's changing, though, because I know one of the people I train judo with, she was telling me about the rules, because they're trying to, I know they've been trying to get it into the Olympics.
Right.
Jiu-jitsu. So judo is in the Olympics. Judo is an Olympic sport. Wrestling actually got pulled.
Bumped. Yeah.
That's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
Like, isn't that what started the Olympics? Like, in ancient Greece?
That's like, that blew me away when I read. Yeah.
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 So, but the thing is, it's about popularity. You know, Dan mentioned earlier about judo being one of the, you know, I don't know what it is now, but being like the second most popular sport in the world outside of the U.S. Yeah. Everywhere else, you go to PE and you do judo.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's what they do, you know, just like, and here it's wrestling practice, you know, and stuff. So,
and jiu-jitsu is starting to be part of a school activity.
Oh, is it?
Not in, as far as I know, not too much in the US, but
elsewhere.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's pretty interesting the way things are changing. And that's really, when I started in judo, man, you get these mindsets, you know, you roll with people who do jiu-jitsu, and I'm just like, man, I don't like these guys' attitudes. You know, like there's people with these attitudes, and it really, really, really pushed me away from jiu-jitsu. And just recently I've came around.
I won't allow that in my school.
No. And it's not there. Like I went and, you know, all the people at your school are super nice. Actually at our school, I should say, it is, everybody's super nice. There's no attitudes, no egos, you know, everybody's cool. Everybody's fun to roll with, and it's awesome, you know? And I think, the last few years of MMA has really, kind of mellowed out a lot of people, kind of changed things for jiu-jitsu and judo, and kind of made it a cohesive element to where jiu-jitsu guys want to learn judo and judo guys want to learn jiu-jitsu. It's kind of changed the face of everything.
And I think what you're talking, I mean, you mentioned earlier about, you know, advice to potentially a parent who might want to get a kid into a particular school or a particular field of martial arts or whatever.
Yeah.
And I wanted, for years, I wanted to do martial arts, and I didn't really start until probably my junior year of college, I think, is when I finally started. But I was actively looking, and it was exactly that kept turning me off. I would go to a school and sit in on the one free lesson, and I would either be like, I mean, I would just pretty instantly just be like, no, I don't want to be around this.
It was like old school karate kid.
Or just whatever. Like, this one was just way too aggressive. Everyone wanted to prove something. And then I'm like, I'm the 6'5" guy with dreads, and they just want to like take me down hard, you know?
Or then you could beat the big guy.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Or then you'd get to a school, like I said earlier, you'd get to one and it's just way too formal. And like, it's by the time we're done like doing this formal ancient stretching technique, it's like 45 minutes of the class is done, and I'm like, that doesn't fit. So it's like, I mean, you really like spend some time, whether you're an adult who wants to go or whether you have a kid, it's like, go and see the school and meet the people and see what it's about. Cause you can walk into some, and maybe it's what you want. You might be a very aggressive person and you want to come hard all the time, and you don't like, you might need that aggression to push you to a new level or whatever, in which case you don't want to go to a certain school that's really mellow. Cause for me, it was like the best thing about my karate days were the fact that I was in a small class. There were seven of us because my sensei didn't teach a whole lot of people, and we all knew each other's strengths and weaknesses, and we all knew what we were working on, and we would be fighting, and like, you sometimes you would just stop a match and we'd be like, no, that's the thing that you keep doing, like, you like that right there is what we're talking
about.
Like, and you, but it's helpful, and it's like, we're not trying to clean each other's clock, we're trying to help each other get better while we're trying to get better, and you just feel this sense of camaraderie with all the people that you're studying with, and it just makes it it truly makes it a magical experience. It's like you just look forward to going. And I mean,
you know, you mentioned about being mellow at a class and then not liking it or
being super, too aggressive.
So I'm a Ralph Gracie student, and, going back to some of the old stories, man, and then going back to talking about new students coming in, just beating them up. And Ralph's, man, that's how it was, man.
Oh,
I bet. If you were a new student, you got beat up. And if you stayed, you were tough. You're going to be a part of our group. I mean, it's a little too extreme.
Yeah.
Now, Ross actually told me last night to ask you about how rough it was at Gracie.
Not taking anything away from Ralph, because I'll tell you right now, dude, he put that aggression in me.
Right.
And without it, oh my gosh, man, I would have lost a lot of matches. You know what I'm saying? But his aggression and his demeanor looking at me while I'm fighting, it helped me finish a lot of people that I did.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But I can understand. So, you know, if you're too mellow, this is a self-defense martial art.
Sure.
Right? Are you going to go hug your opponent?
Right.
No. What you want to do in a self-defense situation, you have no way out of it, you finish and get out of there.
Yeah. Right.
You don't hang around for the parade, because there's no parade.
No.
You know, you're going to get knocked out.
No.
So there needs to be a medium.
Absolutely.
Because there's a lot of people out there that don't like it too rough. There's a lot of people that don't like it too soft. So you find that medium and you go with it. And
just like the ladies.
Yeah. Well, there's,
and you've also, it's like, if you, I think it's also a job of a really good instructor to realize this guy's a little bit too soft. I need to get him to be more aggressive. And then you have to look at one of your students and say, this guy's a little bit too aggressive. Like, I need to kind of take him down a notch and get him kind of.
And that's rough.
Out,
that's rough to do. That's how you lose students. You know, I've seen
tough,
it.
It's tough, man.
Yeah.
There's some people you just can't turn around.
Yeah.
So, you know,
and it depends on what their intent is too. Like, if you're going to go out for competition, like, you need that mindset and aggression. So,
well, and there is two different people. There's people that do it for recreation. There's people that are actually competing. And, those two together, it can be rough sometimes, you know, like, you have to get your recreational players up there with those aggressive competition players, even though they're not, you're training each other. You know what I mean? If I'm not very good and you want to be good, I'm not making you better.
Right.
You know, so everybody has to be on the same level, regardless of what they're training for, and getting them there takes the expertise of a good coach, you know? And so,
and I know that you said, you were quoted in that interview to talk about like a competition can't be considered a fight, but that was your big thing that Gracie taught you, was you have to have that mentality that you're going in as a fight or you're going to lose.
You don't know how many times I've read online where these so-called tough guys, right? They're keyboard warriors, and they're saying, well, you can't call it a fight. There's no punching and kicking. Okay, well then
I disagree.
Please step on the mat. You know, and with somebody who's been doing it for a while, and then we'll see how you think about that, because you need to go into that match thinking it's a fight, because if you don't and that other guy does, he has the mental advantage over you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I agree with that wholeheartedly. How I raised up, especially in judo, being aggressive, if you didn't go out there to kill the person, you would get nothing.
The judo's so aggressive.
The other guy's going to kill you. You know what I mean? Like, if you don't go out there to kill, literally, not harm them physically, but I mean, if you didn't go out there to go as hard as you can, you will get beat every single time, especially at a high level.
It's not to kill him, but the mental, you got to go out there to throw. Yep. I'm going to throw him. Yep. I'm going to finish him, you know.
Control.
And jiu-jitsu, I'm going to submit him.
Yep.
So not to bring up something awkward, but how do you think that mentality helped you? Like, I know there's a real competitive nature between you and your brother. Like, I saw some stuff about Eye of the Tiger, and there was a competition that you guys had where your brother kind of overtook you, 8,000 to 6,000 on Wii Eye of the Tiger. What do you think happened there, and how did that mental attitude that Gracie prepared you not put you in the right spot to defeat him?
Well, first of all, I think Dave was secretly practicing behind closed doors.
He did look like he had it. You would second guess some of your emotions there. I saw that.
Man, I was ready. I was all, dude, I'm going to beat him. You know, he's my smaller little brother. He's younger. But no, seriously, I think he was practicing.
There's some beer involved, too, though.
He was cheating. He was cheating. You're saying he's cheating.
No, that's why he challenged me. He must have been at home, you know, eight hours a day doing the Eye of the Tiger.
Was it at his house?
Jogging to it, just listening.
Whose house was it?
That was my parents in Modesto.
Okay.
Neutral ground. Do you own a Wii? Does he have a Wii?
At the time, I believe so. I didn't practice.
You know? So how did you take defeat? I mean, what were you?
They hugged. They hugged it out. It was.
What painful. Did you cry after? I'm talking about when you got home.
No, when he wasn't when he wasn't there. Yeah, I went home and practiced, but I never got the rematch.
He went straight to Walmart and bought a Wii. Yeah. Bought two Wiis.
That's how you do it, though. You never give him the rematch.
It's because you weren't wearing. You got to wear a Wii.
Oh, I got a story. Oh my gosh. So. I was really good at Street Fighter 2.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I used to beat my brother all the time. I mean, like, his friends would come over and we'd all play.
Does he have a stand-up arcade? He has it posted on his Instagram. Does he have an arcade cabinet?
He used to. I don't know if he does anymore.
He tried to step it up to you.
Oh, man. Isn't that awesome? But okay, so I used to beat him all the time, Street Fighter 2. Man.
Who's your guy? You're Ken. You look like a Ken.
I could play a number. Ken, Guile.
Yeah.
He's professional, okay?
The blonde guy.
Talk to him about that.
I've competed in tournaments. Yeah, so anyway, this one time he beats me and he turns to me, okay, I'm done.
And he's quit? He retired?
He has never played me again.
Oh. That's how he does. So he did the Guitar Hero thing to get you. No rematch. Street Fighter, no rematch.
I have a story. Me and my brother played Street Fighter 2, and I was, I was usually Ken, honestly, but I was Blanka because my brother could not beat me if I was Blanka, and I would just do the shot. He would jump. I would do the shock. He'd bounce off me, and then I'd run over when he's stunned and bite his head, like the jump up and bite his head. So I beat my brother 37 times in a row, and he was throwing such a fit. My mom yelled from the kitchen. She's like, get in here. And I go in the, I was like, what?
She made you let him beat you.
She's like, let him win right now. I swear to God, I'm unplugging that, putting in the closet. I was like, if I let him win, he is going to know. She's like, you make it look real. And so I go back in there and I was like, this is going to be worse. We're losing the Sega for sure. And so we sit down and it's just like round one, and I go for it. And like, I'm try as best as I can to make it look real. And he was just like, you let me win. He freaked out so bad. My mom just walked in, yanked the cords out, put in the closet, grounded from that.
Oh man.
So the Street Fighter and brothers, that's a serious thing.
You needed to play like a long game though. You need to be like, all right, mom, give me like give me like five more matches. Because if I go in right now and lose,
yeah, he's gonna know.
He's
yeah.
gonna know.
Just after mom talked to me.
Yeah, he gets the fire in his belly three matches yeah. in, and then he beats me.
There
yeah.
was no discussing yeah. it with mom. It was it reached its boiling.
You could have at least
you got to get thumb fatigue first, and then
just
you know.
Fake a cramp or a heart attack or something.
that's the best game in the world.
Street Fighter 2.
My buddy used to be
still.
I have it. Yeah,
he was, my buddy was Chun Li, and he'd step on your head. He'd go a-tot, and do that little flip thing, and then
can you do that again?
A-tot.
All right,
nice.
Tiger.
Yeah. So I did. I was looking at some stuff, and SureDog.com, which is the global authority on mixed martial arts. Is that true? Are they actually?
They're pretty big.
Okay.
They're pretty large.
But they have you listed as 1-1 with a win that's a submission. And they have you listed at 171 pounds. And they have you listed
6'7"
at 0'0".
Yes.
That's awesome.
0'0".
0 foot.
He's the whitest, shortest
0 foot
ever.
0", which instantly erased their credibility for me.
I was almost a Oompa Loompa.
Yeah. you were 3 feet shy of an Oompa Loompa.
On the Jiu-Jitsu Loompa.
So you might want to get in touch with them and update your height, because I don't know if they've got
At the time, I knew the owner. I don't know.
There's just a huge thing on social media. Something happened where he got edged out, I guess. I actually fixed his computer. He came in. My buddy's good friends with him.
I thought he sold it.
Made some money.
I don't know.
I haven't talked to my friend yet, but it didn't seem like it was a good separation. Like, I don't think he's involved in any way anymore. I'll have to ask my buddy and I'll let you know.
For those who want to know, I'm 5'11". So
we're going to continue on this conversation in web form. Right now we're going to end the radio episode. Do we need to say anything? We got like 30 seconds maybe ish. Shout out
Arm Hunter on YouTube.
Armhunter.com. Get the gi. It's a sweet gi. Yeah, and you can get your DVD for free. And don't YouTube it, or we will come for you.
Yep.
But and keep listening, because we're going to keep the conversation going on the web only. So. Yep.
And there'll be some good details about Brent getting beat up some more. So, anyway, this is the Sofa King Podcast, and you've listened to the radio edition. If you're listening to it on the radio, go to the web, sofakingpodcast.com, and you can download the full episode with all the good bonus material. And that's it. Don't be a retard. No Yucateco hot sauce. We love them.
Turn a radio edition of the Sofa King Podcast. To hear an uncut version of this episode or listen to a separate web-only podcast every Tuesday, visit SofaKingPodcast.com or find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or your favorite podcast app. You can reach the Sofa Kings at Sofa King Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Tyrone, presidential candidate for 2016, bringing you back in with the Sofa King Podcast. And remember, death to white people.
Thanks, Tyrone.
Thanks. Thanks, Tyrone, except for that last part.
Why are you offended? You're black. You should be on board with that.
My mom, are you forgetting that my grandfather was Nazi?
He was Nazi. I totally forgot. Oh my God. That side of you is conflicted.
That side of me is very upset.
Half
right
of Dave
now.
Is upset about
my Nazi mother is upset, and my Black Panther father is very proud there.
This is the deal. And I have to defend Tyrone, because with Trump being a candidate, he has to go above and beyond Trump's antics.
Oh, that's true. He's got to
step up the campaign, you know, the slogans.
I'll talk to him this week. I'm going to get him to use as his platform that he needs to build a wall around white people.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Dave is so... Dave hates white people, but realizes there's a supreme race.
He's right. Like, I'm convinced.
He's like, damn it, this sucks.
Conflicted. Again, I hate them, but they're perfect.
Damn those blonde hair and blue eyes.
What do I fit in? I'm like half and half. Mexican, white, and
what is Camarillo? Here.
It's Spanish.
Spanish?
Yeah.
So is your mom Spanish? Or I know your dad's white, right?
Mom's German.
Your mom's German.
Irish, German, yeah.
And your dad's the Spanish one?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Mexican, Spanish, yeah. He's both.
Okay.
And so he's 6'4", 260 apparently, right?
Yeah.
Big guy. Did your dad do judo?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah. Explain
so you've got
that.
Some good Nazi blood in you, though.
Yeah.
I do. I can represent.
We have you. You already saw our shower valves over here in the basement. So we mentioned earlier in the episode, your dad, you know, started you in judo. Does he do any jiu-jitsu? Is what I want to know. I was going to ask you.
He's rolled a few times on the mat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So mostly, is he still training?
No.
No. So he's retired.
Yeah. He plays World War II reenactments, right?
Oh, okay. That's nice. Actually cool. That's tough to do.
I know your dad actually flew people in. Like, he was like grooming you for the Olympics at one point. Like, you're a national champ and he flew people in that like lived at your house, was what I read.
Yes.
To help train you guys.
Yeah. He would pick the top guys in Japan and fly them over here, and we train with them.
That's insane.
Yeah,
that's
and crazy. We even had a guy live in our house for a year.
Wow.
He even built a building in our backyard and matted it.
To train.
Yes.
Wow, that's crazy. Wow.
We had
that's
no dedication. No excuse.
That is dedication. Yeah, you don't have to go to the gym. It's in your backyard.
Yeah, exactly.
It literally was in our backyard. Yeah.
That's crazy. I wish that was. Man,
just so you know, in my mind, I have like a full on like Rob Van Dam, or I'm sorry, not Rob Van Dam, Rob.
close.
What's the other guy's name?
Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Jean-Claude Van Damme. I have a Jean-Claude.
What's the other guy's
the
name?
The other one. I had a Jean-Claude Van Damme sequence in my brain of you like training with coconuts and like jumping, like in the backyard, you're like walking
He's
on
like,
poles.
Yes,
and,
yes.
We had goat heads we had to cross.
Nice, oh, nice. Man, that's killer. That's worse than hot coals.
Yeah.
This thing stay in your feet.
Oh,
so I was looking in there. You referenced this article earlier. There's an article called Dan Camarillo's Journey from Wimp to World Champion Fighter, and it's on a blog. You can go to the Chuck Rylant blog to read it. And I read the interview, but then what I found more entertaining was the fact that I read some responses on Reddit to the interview. And I wanted to read some of them. I know you haven't heard these, but I wanted to read a couple of them because apparently they isolate a feature of yours that you may or may not be aware of that apparently other people are.
A feature.
Oh, great. That's
you don't like so, this. I'll get out of the way.
Time's
we'll
up,
let
right?
You, we'll let you Nazis fight it out. I mean,
Gummy Boy OTM is this Reddit username says,
I don't know him.
I have some different memories of Daniel Camarillo. I was pretty jealous of him coming up. Actually, it seemed like he didn't have to work very hard, and then when he did show up, he would still kick mine and everyone else's butts. I still have nightmares about his good-natured laugh as he would throw an armbar me. I would consider Dan a very good friend now for nearly 20 years, and this interview is great because it offers me some insight and perspectives I didn't even know. In addition, it's a lot of fun to see Dan so active on the scene now and actively competing, but he's still inspiring to me. And a follow-up from Beber Zero.
That's Bieber. Bieber.
I guess it is Bieber Zero. Sorry, I'm not.
I was kidding, but I like that.
I think you're right. I think it probably is. I don't think I'm white enough.
Jedi mind trick.
He just mind fucked you all over the place.
Brent loves Justin Bieber Zero said said that laugh is terrifying, especially in the scramble when your brain is trying to figure out where your body is and all you can hear is his laughing. Keep your elbows in, keep your elbows in, keep your elbows in, keep your elbows in.
Because he's the arm hunter.
So apparently you have a laugh that is good natured, but apparently scares the shit out of people while
like
they're
the
fighting.
It's like the Velociraptor scream. Like, you know, you hear that and you're like, oh my God.
That's a good mental fuck, though. It's like intimidating. Yeah. Like just giggle.
I don't know. I'm curious who's that.
You might just do it unknowingly that you do it.
The other guy's Alan Marquez, and he's a good friend.
Oh, Gummy
of mine.
Bear.
Yeah, Gummy.
You know Gummy.
Well,
Bear.
His real name's his nickname is Gumby.
Gumby.
His real name is Alan Marquez, and he's friends with Scotty, who they both started on the mat.
Which is interesting because he's a good friend. He's known you for 20 years, like he said, and he didn't know a lot of the stuff that went on in your life. You know, he thought you just came there and beat him up and didn't have to practice.
Well, so, he trained with me at Half Gracie's.
Oh, okay.
For 4 years. Yeah. Five years.
Yeah. So that's pretty interesting.
But, Yeah, that other guy. I'm curious who that is.
Yeah, I don't know. And then one last one that apparently I don't think they know you, but it's from Rude Garami. In my opinion, Dan Camarillo has the best looking and most fluid jiu-jitsu I have seen. I don't know how he'd stack up against the other greats, or the other all-time greats, but in terms of all-around grappling skills, he is definitely my idol. His entries into groundwork from throws and takedowns are easily my favorites to watch, and are what originally made me branch out from judo to Brazilian jiu-jitsu as well. So you definitely have fan base.
I thank you. That's always been my problem. My father's been on me about it. My brother's been on me about it, is not training hard. And now that I'm older, I realize my judo probably could have went a little higher. I'm not saying number one.
Yeah.
Jimmy Pedro is number one in judo at the time in my division.
Yeah.
Amazing. Now, you know, I probably wouldn't have reached that, but number two, number three, maybe, you know what I mean? I was number six in the U.S.
Did you, like, you're qualified for the Olympics at that time, right? Because of your ranking already? How does that work?
I was number six.
Okay.
But you have to realize too, that you have the toughest division, the 100, what were you weighing at the time?
I was fighting in the 170s and 165.
That for me in judo, especially, that is probably the toughest.
It was the most stacked.
Competition that you could get. I was always 100 plus or just under 100. It's not as stacked. Like, the guys are tough, they're big, but you might only have four matches. You know, those, you go into those matches, you can get 10, 15, you know, matches, and it would just be crazy. I just wouldn't want to do it. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'd quit. That'd be crazy.
Yeah, I was number six, and I had three guys above me that I would beat at tournaments.
But right.
I just didn't rank that as high as I did. And then in house, you know, the first couple of years I showed up all the time, and then the last couple of years, but I was, you know, I don't know.
I read you actually, like, I mean, that's some serious high level pressure, like, that at the end point of your judo thing, before stopping judo and going to the Bay Area to start doing what you're doing, like, you actually had to go to UCLA because of weight loss, because you thought something might medically be wrong with you, because you're like 143 pounds. So,
yeah, my natural weight at that time was 165, and I fought 170s, and I lost, I went all the way down to 140.
Roughly 20 pounds, 20, 25 pounds.
Was it 143?
That 143 is what I read. That's like Skeletor. Yeah, that's...
No, I didn't know what was wrong. And, you know, and they took a bunch of tests, and it evidently just came up to be stress. Because once I moved from Fresno to the Bay Area to train with Half in 2 weeks, man, I was like, no problem.
Came right back.
Shoulders.
Came right back.
Yeah. Once the pressure was off.
Pressure off.
And that's a lot of high-level people right then, too, right? Yeah. That was stopping judo and making the switch. Oh,
once I made the switch, I didn't go back to judo until like 3 or 4 years later. I went to Willie Cahill's in the Bay Area.
Yeah, and Cahill's an awesome coach, so...
Yeah. Yeah.
Well-known. Now, I was going to ask you, like, personally, I went through a divorce, and there was other reasons, but a big reason was that I wasn't home. I was training so much that I wasn't available to my wife, and I had an issue. I had stopped judo, and I had an issue training again because I had, like, these hard feelings towards it. You know what I mean? Like, on one end, it was something that I loved to do. And on the other end, I had these like weird feelings towards it because it kind of flipped my life upside down. You know, like, it was one of those factors that I trained so much that it kind of, and actually we were talking to one of the guys at your school.
Yeah, no names.
Yeah, no names. It kind of happened to him too, where he trained so much in jiu-jitsu that it kind of flipped his marriage up, you know, and it's something that kind of was like a bitter feeling about it. You know, like, I love doing judo, I love training, and now I'm loving doing jiu-jitsu. Did you have that same bitter feeling going back to judo or like trying to start back up doing judo again after all that pressure? You know, like, what was the feeling that you had going back to, you know, starting at Cahill's?
I don't know. You know, the only reason why I went to Cahill's was because of the internet, and I shouldn't have read it, you know?
Yeah.
So at the time, I tapped everybody in the Nationals, Joe Moreira Nationals,
yeah,
and my weight in the Open, and then I go U.S. Open, and then I tap everyone my weight in the open. I mean,
yeah,
I'm tapping everybody at blue belt. Why am I not?
Yeah, I read you lost your first tournament, freaked out, came back the next year, dominated blue belt, and that the last then you went all weight division, and the last guy you actually popped his arm and he wouldn't tap.
Yeah, yeah. It's so
damn.
So,
yeah,
but that's I did that at Nationals and U.S. Open, right?
Yeah,
and here I am. I'm still blue.
Yeah,
yeah.
And everyone around me, I'm watching Halff, and he's promoting everyone around me, and I'm just waiting, and waiting, waiting. I didn't get promoted.
Yeah.
Well, me being the immature idiot that I am, I decide, okay, I'm reading online. They're calling me a sandbagger, and I don't want to fight blue belts no more. So what happens to me? I quit for almost a year. And I go,
that's rough.
I go to Willie Cahill's to stay in shape, you know?
Right.
But I was only there like 3 months.
Okay. Yeah.
3 months out of a year, you get out of shape.
Yeah.
But I'll never do that again. I don't recommend that. And then going to losing a marriage or having trouble with an ex or a girl or whatever, I've always been honest to everybody I've dated. I said, there is one thing you will not interfere with. And that is my training.
Yeah.
And so, you know, right now I'm in a happy situation. I'm getting married next weekend. And,
awesome. Congratulations. Nice.
Congrats.
She's on the same mat I am. And I think that's the best, you know.
Yeah, that's good.
So,
yeah, when you have that understanding, I think it helps. But no, I always find it interesting to see different perspectives, like, you know, because obviously when you love something this much and you do it so much, I mean, obviously you have a school, you're there. You quit, from what I understand, a decent job to just run your school, to turn that into a lifestyle, pretty much. How'd that go down? Or is it personal? I mean, you don't have to talk about it if you don't want.
No,
I mean,
no. You know, my job was changing. They were firing everybody anyway. I'll say laying off.
Yeah.
They were laying off everybody anyway. It changed so bad. Like, I was working from home.
Yeah.
You know, for 4 straight years. They go corporate. They bring in a new manager. He wipes everybody out. That's what was happening.
Yeah.
And then, and here I am. I'm just like, I've got none of my people that I grew up doing this job with anymore.
Right.
These are all new people from.
They're bringing in all these other people. Yeah.
Anyway, I just said, you know, I'm done. Let me go or whatever, and I'm gonna concentrate on my jiu-jitsu. These people have. This is exactly what I told my boss. I said, these people have family.
Yeah.
They're going to need this job. Me, let me try to make it out on my own. I at least have something I can go to right now.
Yeah,
that's
and,
legit.
And I want to concentrate on my students.
Yeah.
Everybody wishes I was there all the time. And now I'm there all the time. And look what happened this year. It's growing. It's growing huge.
Yeah.
You know, I'm doubled my students from when I lost my job.
Yeah.
You know,
that's awesome. And man, running a club, is rough, you know, and I think jiu-jitsu probably has a better chance of anything, but I know running a martial arts school or a club, if you're out there listening and you go to a club, I mean, to have, sometimes you have 40 people on the mat, you know, at night, you know, I mean, or more, and it's so crowded. Like, that is amazing.
That's epic. Yeah.
Yes.
That's,
I mean, that's awesome. I mean, you know, and congrats to you and hopefully it continues. I mean, cause like I said, me and Brent are there and it's awesome. And, it is a family environment and, it's what you've created is, you know, something to be, wanted by many, you know, I mean, everybody wishes they could have a school that does so well. And hopefully it continues, you know, it's a weird thing, man. Like, switching for me. And one of the reasons, that actually I wanted to come to your school too, was that because I came from judo and I know you came from judo and, you know, you have a better understanding than anybody else in the area of the switch and everything else. So, you know, that's what I've been working towards, and, you know, hopefully it works out. So
I saw something cool. You guys were on a Discovery Channel, that Time Warp show.
Oh yeah, we forgot about
where they like slow-mo throw a water balloon at someone's face and it explodes. But you guys did some jiu-jitsu moves in slow-mo with Kenny Florian and your brother Dave. How was that?
Yeah, that was fun. You know, one day I get a phone call from David's wife at the time, my brother's wife, saying, hey, do you want to be on Discovery Channel? I'm all, yeah. that what's it about? You know?
Why are you asking me this right now?
At the time,
unless it's Deadliest Catch, no.
At the time, Time Warp was one of my favorite shows I used to watch. You know, slow motion, everything, and talk about it scientifically or whatever. Well, the producer was a purple belt in jiu-jitsu.
Oh, wow.
And he was one of our fans and immediately called us up. We want you on Time Warp.
That's great.
They flew us over to Boston, we were in one of their best hotels they had, paid for all our meals, gave us some money, and we were on Time Warp with Kenny Florian and Aaron Tohill. And that was fun, man.
Yeah, it was cool.
What I was sad about is it came out the same night the third Transformers movie came out.
Aww, you got duped. That sucks.
And that movie wasn't even that good.
No, exactly. that's what DVRs are for.
Well, anyway. One of the things is if you can check it out, go on YouTube, just search Time Warp Camarillo. It comes up. You do a flying arm bar. Is it a variation? It's kind of a
spinning... My brother does the move called the Chaotic, and I'll tell you something about it now. Doing that movie almost broke my nose. We had to do that move like 7 times. Mm. And my nose was, you didn't want to touch it.
Yeah, it's an all-in just jump.
His leg comes through, huh? It just tags you.
After that, there was the Expendables came out like 4 or 5 months after.
Yeah.
And you see Sylvester Stallone pulling off the same exact move. It's like, he was watching the
Time Warp.
I'm not kidding. Yeah. Then Fast and Furious, they had the move. And then another movie had the move. And everyone, that move
is very like extravagant, acrobatic. But probably realistically, like you could pull it off, I bet.
Oh, people have already done it in tournaments now after they watched that episode. Yeah,
that's great.
Which comes to your Arm Hunter. Like, does that derive from the Flying Triangle thing, or like where did Arm Hunter come from? Are you known for a signature move?
Training at Ralph Gracie's. So when I left judo, in my mind, like, I'm good at arm bars. That's all I hung, arm bar. Going into jiu-jitsu, I started like just training. I started, I don't know much about arm bars. I'm gonna learn the technical.
Start from a base.
Let me see, for the Nationals, the one that you said I started wiping everyone out.
Yeah.
I was training with this one guy, and that's all I hunted for, man. Armbar. When we were done training, we rolled like four rounds. And he gets up and he goes, dude, all you do is hunt for armbar. Now, you gotta understand, everybody in the academy has nicknames. That's a jiu-jitsu thing.
Yeah.
Some people in my academy, they got their nicknames. You know what I mean? I didn't have a nickname, but I'm the type of person, I'm not going to name myself.
Well, that's not a nickname.
That's against the rules.
Dude, you don't do that. Well, so he sits up after I try to arm lock him like a million times. He goes, dude, you're like an arm hunt. He goes, you're like hunting the arm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He goes, that's what we're going to call you, Arm Hunter.
I'll take it.
And I was like,
yeah, because it could have been a stupid name.
Yeah. You know?
It could
have been Goldilocks. It could have been any
Roly Poly.
We're calling you Shrimp Gumbo.
Gummy Bear.
I was like, I'm going to keep that name.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's the way to go with that one. Somebody gave it to you.
You land that flying triangle at like high, and people have to know to expect it and have to watch your videos, because I don't know much about anything and I've watched your videos, and you have that whole bait, like you're going for the leg, get them to reach down and jump into that triangle, and you land that on black belts. I just don't think that happens at that level of competition usually, right?
One thing that I've learned about jiu-jitsu, and if you watch like, what was it called? The first videos on Brazilian jiu-jitsu was done, the Gracie, Horion. Gracie in action, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And he talks about the natural reaction of people.
Yeah.
That's what they take advantage of in jiu-jitsu, right?
Yeah.
The natural reaction, if you try to kick their leg, they try to reach down and grab your leg for a takedown.
Right.
Oh, well, so then that's what I do. I fake a leg sweep, they reach down, I'm already jumping over it.
Yeah.
And I've done that in judo too. Natural reaction, you go to throw, they stick their hip out to block, you throw them the opposite direction.
Yeah. It's right. Faking. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was funny. Well, you tapped this one guy. I can't remember his name, but in 11 seconds, and the guy couldn't even shake your hand with the right, with his hand, because he shook opposite, because his arm was in 11 seconds. You had it. And then you went against a guy named Savage, in like the US Open, I think it was, in a final match. But the funniest part about that was the respect from the commentators. There was three commentators. I don't know if you've seen that video.
Oh, you were telling me. Yeah.
It was so funny. Like, they're talking about, like, oh, it's going to be a good match, blah, blah, blah. Dan Camarillo and something Savage, like Joel Savage or John Savage, goes out there, blonde guy. And like, pretty quick, man, you nailed it. You guys get up, you shake hands. And the announcers or the commentators were like, he's like, God. He's like, I wish Dan was my dad. Yeah. Like, one guy's, he's like, I wish, can Dan Camarillo be my dad? And the other guy said, he's like, I just want like an infusion of blood from him. Just like, he's like, it's right better now, than steroids. Right now, like, just gotta get one vial. And then the last guy's like, I just want to touch his lapel. Like, I just want to touch his gi. And I was like, dude, they completely went unprofessional. Like, they couldn't help it. Like,
that's awesome though.
Yeah, I mean, you just like knocked them out of like, they forgot where they were at, and they were fanboys for like 30 seconds. And they were like, so next up, you know, after we show the fanboys.
Yeah. After I have boners, all three of us, like, Jesus Christ.
That Camarillo fever.
Yeah, I guess. That's pretty awesome, though.
That
I mean,
it was awesome.
I don't know. I mean, we rolled the other day, and you got me in an arm bar. Like, I don't even know what happened. Like, I just gave you, like, here, take my arm, Dan, and everything's tight. You know, like, the arm bar, the name's there for a reason. You know, like, you don't feel it happen, and it's just, you're just hurting painfully, but...
Anything you would have done different? Any regrets? Like the Olympic thing, like quitting judo? Do you feel like...
I wish I would have listened to my father and taken it more serious.
Right.
Yeah. Who knows? You never know.
Yeah, you don't know the heights.
You don't know what you're going to accomplish unless you stick to it and take it serious. And that's one thing that, you know, I wish I would have done. But now I'm taking my academy serious. You know what I'm saying? It's like, teach my students, see where they can go.
Yeah.
They want me to compete. I compete for fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, yeah,
and,
exactly.
And I try to entertain everybody and make those highlights for you guys. And but mostly,
well, and that, I've been watching YouTube videos, and that, like,
crazy. And that's crazy though, because you go out there for fun and you know, I want to make the highlights for you, but they're like some of the best moments in, you know, jiu-jitsu or grappling history. You know, people remember those things, and that's amazing.
You have,
know,
you ever, like, thought about bringing the mullet back? Because I saw some early videos. You have sweet
business in the front, party in the back.
You're going to fucking pay for this next week.
Yeah. Your beard is getting yanked on.
He doesn't roll with the likes of me.
I wish I had a dollar for every time they told me, hey, bring that mullet back.
Yeah. Oh, man.
People wish I had it.
Yeah, that'd
I
be
had
a mine.
One. For the record, I had one. Yeah. So I had a perm in the back.
Well, you know, back in the day, they didn't call it a mullet.
No, it was the Billy Ray Cyrus.
Was it?
Yeah. I don't even know if it had a name.
It didn't have a name. It was just popular.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you showed up with that haircut in the next tournament you do, they're going to be like, oh, no, Dan's back.
Oh,
like,
shit.
He's back. Oh. Like, it's going to be, and then you do the laugh. Like, it's just going to be over.
Oh, man.
They change your name to Giggle Mullet from Arm Hunter.
the new nickname. Yeah. That's horrible.
I'll remember that next class.
I've said nothing but good things about you.
As soon as the episode ends, we're going to see if gigglemullet.com is open.
You think you got bruises now?
Oh, man.
He's going to dislocate both your elbows.
As long as I can still come to class. Yeah. I don't mind bruises. I just don't want permanent injuries.
He's like, have you seen the double arm bar?
Yeah. Have you seen the move where I squeeze you so hard you grow a fucking mullet?
He's going to make up a move.
It's going to be like the fuzzy pumper barbershop from Play-Doh.
Oh,
he's
going
to squeeze you till
the
hair
fuzzy
starts
pumper
popping
barbershop.
You don't remember that?
No.
He'd put Play-Doh in and push a thing and fake Play-Doh hair would grow out of a person. Gosh.
We might have like just made a bumper sticker though. Giggle mullet. So
that's awesome.
Camarillo takeaways, like, what's your advice to someone doing jiu-jitsu or has a kid in jiu-jitsu? Like, what's your major takeaway about jiu-jitsu?
I always think that everybody should at least come learn the basics, plain and simple. You never know when you're going to need it. And then once you understand the basics, nobody can take that knowledge away from you. You know what I'm saying? So come learn, and I don't know, you may fall in love with something new, something useful.
Yeah, it's easy to be the fat guy on the couch holding a beer talking about how someone in the UFC should do something or this or that, but it's a whole other thing to actually go out on the mat and do something.
And Brent knows that.
Yeah, no,
better
for sure.
Than anybody.
Yeah. I just want to lose 40 pounds and learn some stuff, honestly, but getting choked by a girl in the meantime ain't that bad. It's all right.
It's the hardest thing to do is step on that mat.
Yeah.
Do the class.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
I had a lot of anxiety going back, honestly, and it's not like fearful of like losing or anything. I don't know. It's just like an unfamiliar environment and going into it. It's honestly why I haven't gone to night class yet either.
That's the first step. I mean, is actually just taking control and saying, no, I'm going to do this. Go out there and get on the mat.
That's why I try to make my mat welcoming and no egos.
Yeah.
Right. No one's going to come harm you on my mat. You know what I'm saying? So there's nothing to fear.
Yeah. And that pretty much goes, I mean, there's, you know, schools all over the United States, like they're, you know, it's a lot of everybody's family, you know, like wherever you go, they're a family. It's like that in most martial arts.
Yeah.
You know,
you heard of the Camarillo initiation, right?
No. Is Brent going to get that?
No, like every new person, we choke you unconscious and then we wake you up and see how you take it.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm used to that.
Happy Monday. Here I go. I'll be there.
Yeah.
I'm only kidding. We don't.
I was going to say,
probably a liability. I better sign something. I've not officially signed anything.
I have said that to a few new people. They're like, no, that's not okay.
No. Well, and that's one of the things is like, and I always tell people, like, whether you're doing judo, jiu-jitsu, whatever, is a lot of people don't have that. They don't like to be close or they don't like to be choked or smothered. Those things like that. And a lot of doing something like this is getting over those fears. You conquer fears.
I'll be honest. If I smother, I'm claustrophobic.
Yeah.
I have a problem with that, but I've learned techniques to keep, you know, I learned how
keep away.
Techniques
yeah.
to yeah. get right. them off, get yeah. that, to yeah. keep that space.
Get fatty you know? Off you.
Yeah.
I was so gassed the other day. I just tapped when someone had knee on belly. I couldn't breathe on my dagger. I was like, oh
and yeah. And it
like,
happens.
Let's just get back to position. Yeah. That's no fun getting smothered.
But and that's one of the things like is to get out there, get off the couch and go do something that's actually meaningful in your life. And like you said, you might find something that you love, you know. I had a meme that I posted on my Instagram that said, I want to do jiu-jitsu, but I can't afford the fashion because it has this lifestyle to it. You know, the clothing and the hats and shirts and the gis, you know, there are kimonos,
people,
you know.
Some people collect those gis.
Yeah. Man, yeah. It's, like, it's wow. a whole thing, you know, that, you know, so don't feel put off by wearing, you know, an old gi that you have from somewhere or,
yeah, exactly.
you know, I think the first time I went to class with you guys, I went by accident and they were calling me the guy that slaps the mat real hard, you know, because I do judo, you know, falls and I slap the mat, you know, so it's a different, don't be embarrassed. Don't, you know, just be who you are and go and show up. And that's the best thing, you know, to do and get out there and do it.
Mat slapper. That sucks to be your nickname, but it happened.
Yeah.
So then you want to give one more plug for that armbar DVD. Where do they go to get that? What's the website?
Just www.armhunter.com.
Yep. Check out the gi and get an awesome gi and an awesome DVD, which rhymes with gi.
And are all your gis, they come in black? Is it just black gis?
Right now, I have black with the red stitching, you know, matches our academy. And I'm coming out hopefully soon with white and red. And,
okay.
Are there child size gis in the Arm Hunter gi?
Not yet.
Right. So, it's going to be Amazon. I tried, buddy. I'm going to have to Amazon it next week. I'm bringing my boy. But if he sticks to it, he'll get a little Arm Hunter gi.
So that's it. So armhunter.com. Check out Dan Camarillo. Get your free DVD with the gi.
Yep.
And Instagram is armhunter as well, right?
Yep. And Twitter. Right.
Yeah. There's nothing, no at, no weird, any symbols or anything, just armhunter on Instagram.
I don't believe so. I don't know.
All right.
Yeah, I think so.
And you'll find it. Yeah.
I think the most important question is, have you had El Yucateco hot sauce before?
I have not.
Okay. Well, you're leaves with some for sure. Yeah.
You will leave with bottles and you will be a fan.
Awesome.
Don't eat it right before practice.
Though. Being Mexican, I will try it out.
It's a great, so I had some of my hash browns this morning.
That's I don't know if I already. Have the.
You're repeating.
It's all right.
Okay.
So that was a subtle Yucateco shout out. So thanks to El Yucateco,
Now you know it's true. He repeated.
That's right.
Yep. You weren't lying about it. You had it on your potatoes.
That's right.
So we want to give a shout out to Dark Side Graphics for doing our apparel. Punky Brewster there does a really great job working on all of our things.
Salt 7.
Salt 7. where Brent floats all the time. It would be funny if you showed up at Salt 7 and attacked Brent's tank, like, and just like five people just jump in with him.
That sounded naked, like, taint. That's scary. No,
to attack your taint.
Don't attack my taint.
That's what I thought he said.
Yeah. Yeah, man, you should go float with five dudes.
Five dudes attack your taint. Yeah, I was going to, actually, we were going to mention that to you. Did you give him the brochure?
No, because you were not there that day, I think.
Oh, but. Salt 7, they have the deprivation tanks where you float in the Epsom salt.
Oh, he was telling me about
that. Yeah, really cool. Yeah, really,
it
really
helped,
cool.
Man. The other day, I was destroyed. I was so sore. We floated for an hour and a half with the owner, Dirk, down there. And when I got out, I felt great. Like, it made a huge difference. I mean, if 2 cups of Epsom salt in the bathtub fix you, 1,400 pounds of Epsom salt in a giant sensory deprivation tank.
I'll tell you what. I'll go do that.
Mm-hmm.
You get a massage from Lovey or my school.
Okay.
Yeah.
As long as you don't beat me. I'm not making eye contact. This is scary.
You didn't
got to
twist my arm.
Yeah.
No, she's amazing. She took anatomy for 10 years and she knows she'll feel you and know where
maybe,
you're hurt.
Is it the pectorals?
The funny story, I went locally. I won't name where I went, but I was always like uncomfortable going to get a massage. I finally went and got a massage at this place and I had a fairly good experience. It hurt. I went back the next time and it was the weirdest thing. Like, this woman must have been at the end of her shift and didn't want to, like, she's like, so, I'm going to do an impression real quick. She was like, so, like, where are you experiencing pain? Like, where does that happen really? Like, what's going on? What's your main major complaint? I was like, well, you know, it's like really my shoulders, my neck, like my upper back. I just feel like there's a softball back there. And she's like, well, a lot of people don't know is you probably carry a lot of tension in your pectoral muscles. And so we should probably spend some time working on your pectoral muscles. I really think that we should focus on your pec. I was like, what is going on with my pectoral muscles? It's like your trapezius, like your posture is like when you hold up your trapezius, the stress translates when you drop your chin to protect pectorals. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, well,
I want my back rubbed, woman.
Yeah, I'm going to pay you. Like, could you rub here, though? So she was like, laid me down the table. She was like a mix between like Kip from Napoleon Dynamite and I don't know what. But she was like, so we have several essential oils. We have eucalyptus, peppermint. Like, she's like, they all have certain purpose. I was like, I don't know. Like, whatever you don't mind smelling. Yeah, I just want you to rub my shoulders.
Yeah, whichever one helps you rub my shoulders.
Yeah.
My back hurts.
Do you have the shoulder scented oil?
She massaged my fingers, my forearms, my chest. Like, everything. I'm like looking at the clock. I was like, oh my God. Like, I couldn't have said more times that my shoulders and my back hurts. And she has rubbed the shit out of my arms, my chest, like everything. I'm still on my back. Like, at this point, she's like, okay, go ahead and turn over. And I was like, there's like 4 minutes left, bitch. Like, are you really not going to rub my back? So she flipped me over and was just like, started doing this like chicken wing elbow stretch. She's like, I'm just trying to do sternum stretches for, you know, it just helps expand your pectoral. I was like, what in the hell? Never again. Am I requesting? I'm just like, I will go there. I just don't want that person. And no offense. Like, they just didn't listen.
Brent,
I don't know.
You didn't know it, but your pectorals hurt.
So hands off the pectorals.
Yeah.
Or next time, just tell her how bad your pecs hurt, and then she's going to wail on your shoulders.
What most people don't know is that your back
when their
actually
pec
puts
hurts,
a lot of...
It's actually their shoulder.
It was like my toe hurt. She's like, well, the toe bone's connected to the knee bone, and basically, if you follow all the way up, it's your pectorals.
And then we wrap like, those, so we're going to do a lot of work on your pectorals.
Jesus. Yeah. Fetish, anyone? Like, maybe?
See, your areolas, if you rub those, it really puts pressure on the back muscles.
So on that note, though, yes, I will do that, and you should check out floating, because it's awesome. But yeah, thank you, El Yucateco Hot Sauce. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Digital Creations, for our mugs, our mouse pads, bottle openers, all the cool stuff that Digital Creations makes for us. Thank you, Dirk at Salt 7, and Dark Side Graphics for making our shirts.
Yep. Anybody else? You got anything else?
I'm good.
That's it? Any last words?
No, that was awesome.
All right. Giggly mullets. Don't be retarded.
That'll be a stick. Gracie Veterano, old family first fam. Taught the world to swing that double-edged sword, it works fam. BJJ from GJJ, like Cool Herc gave birth to what your DJ plays. But despite the lineage, I will never be closed-minded. Refuse to see beyond the lines, you go blind. Rocket travels the 10th planet, I flow free. I'm welcome on mini-mats, gi to no gi. Though my branch traces roots to the original tree. Roots sprouted from the original seed. Water with blood, sweat, and tears, spotlight with sunlight. That tree became a forest, Balletudo done right. Then voice dominated them all in one night. And hate's on, hasn't been beaten in one fight. Flow with the gold, in a hit on and holly note. That to continue to win, we must continue to grow. Let's go! We did it, mama, we did it. We did it for the love of the game.
rampant. Born with pride and abundance. Look up to the sky, hide a little smile and amusement. Never grow accustomed to losing. Live and die for the love of this music. Compella thrives when the times are the toughest and truest. Keep in mind when the universe gets aligned. When the remnants of this verse are injected into your spine. The evidence of this platform, we rock it all the time. Better in what we stand for, the anchor and the line. Straight slap on a choke if anybody provokes. I'm in it to win and reppin' for my fam and my folks. This ain't just rap now, man, this is murder he wrote. It's like Mickey D's on the streets, if you look in the coat. You can compound your greed with the image of hope. Study the foul physics of falsified gimmicks. Ride and fall with it and try to ride. Your life ain't worth living if you ain't got vision. Come on. We did it, mama. We did it. We did it for the love of the game. We did it, mama. We did it. I did it for. I did it for. Yes, yes, sir. We did it, mama. We did it. The game will never be the same. We did it, mama. We did it. I did it for. I did it for. Alliance, a check planet rocking with Irish science. Silencing all these idiots caught up in all their ignorance. Two clans fighting under the same banner. We all got love for this ground game, and that's all that matters. In the balance of the teachings of the grandmasters. I'm trying to master the system, that's what I'm after. And stay true to the craft, spark trees to relax. Old school miracle, lyrical lace in the track. And I'm working the angles, only sharp and precise, man. Back in the day when I was learning to rock in this mic. Paying homage to the classic shit. Dilated, undisputed, heavyweights repping Los Angeles. And yeah, I do this for the 213. The storm could flip down, you know I'm with that G. So fire in the hole, slick with the flow. High caliber weapons, it's here to shatter the fucking mold. Come on.
Taught the world to swing that double-edged sword, it works, fam. BJJ from GJJ, like Cool Herc gave birth to what your DJ plays. But despite the lineage, I will never be closed-minded. Refuse to see beyond the lines, you go blind. Rocket travels the 10th planet, I flow free. I'm welcome on mini-mats, gi to no gi. Though my branch traces roots to the original tree. Roots sprouted from the original seed. Water with blood, sweat, and tears, spotlight with sunlight. That tree became a forest, Bonnetudo done right. Then voice dominated them all in one night. And hate Sean hasn't been beaten in one fight. Flow with the gold, in a hit on and holly note. That to continue to win, we must continue to grow. Let's go!